This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious or stir something delicious,
yes,
drink it all, and you can't have it.
That's right. Today, we are talking about martinis.
You all have been asking for it. It's the most popular drink out there right now in 2023.
This episode was suggested by us.
Yeah, during some other episode,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, even though neither of us drinks martinis, but we're going to today.
We may have an actual three martini lunch right before your eyes or ears.
Wow. Okay. Matthew, have you ever ordered a martini anywhere?
Never in my life. Okay. I was once with a friend when I was in, like, my early 20s who ordered a martini, maybe even, like, late teens, and, like, let me have a sip. And I'm like, this is so bad.
I have never ordered a martini.
I once ordered a Manhattan at a wedding.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a classic, like, wedding thing.
Sure.
That would be, like, the groom's drink and the bride's drink would be something that's, like,
that explains why
Cosmo-y.
When I ordered it, the bartender was like, well, you're a real man, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think that the first wedding... Oh, this is turning out to be our Manhattan show.
Okay.
Because the first wedding that I remember attending as, like, an adult who could drink alcohol...
Rather than, like, a flower girl.
Right. It had, like, that classic, like, gender binary cocktail thing. The groom's drink is
great,
the Manhattan.
I love it.
The bride's drink was the Cosmo. This was, like, 1998.
That sounds right.
Or maybe 1999. I think I had just turned 21.
Did you go to Carrie and Big's wedding?
I did. I did, yeah. No, it was my cousin Jason's wedding, and I had the hots, like, big time for his best man.
Nice.
This guy named Tim. Who had kind of, like, sad eyes. As
you
know, I like
him
haunted.
Were you the, what do you call it, chief bridesmaid?
No, I wasn't even in the wedding.
Okay.
I wasn't even in the wedding, and I was, like, 21 years old, and this guy was, like, 29.
Yeah.
And that is an age gap that I just feel like can't really be breached.
No, I mean, like...
I mean, definitely there are some dudes who would breach it. But
yeah, I was like in, like, a one night stand context.
Yeah, no, I felt like that guy, he was like, get away from me.
Yeah, sure.
But this is our martini episode.
Yeah, so let's go down martini memory lane.
Okay.
I guess we already started. All right, so my only other martini memory lane that I remember is that one time I remember my friend Liza telling me very excitedly, like texting me to say that her husband Dan had surprised her with a dirty martini, and this was like a delightful thing. And I didn't know what it was. I looked it up, and I was like, that's like an ambush rather than a surprise. But she liked it.
I think that the only time I've ever really considered ordering a martini was in New Orleans at lunch at Commander's Palace, where they have a 25 cent.
25
Sorry,
cent
I,
martini?
Yes, I think it's a 25 cent martini.
Why?
I guess so
people like us will talk about it and
yeah,
it's free advertising.
I think so. I mean, this was in 2016.
Yeah.
I had met up with my friend Ben in New Orleans. Ben is definitely a martini drinker. And anyway, we went to Commander's Palace. I think I had a Negroni or something, which was a $6 half-hearted Negroni. because I just don't want to drink hard liquors at lunchtime, despite the fact that that's what we're doing today.
Sure. Yeah. No. Now, the fact that your friend Ben is a martini drinker and is like less than 100 years old, I feel like this would be a thing that would start ironically and then you grow to like it.
I think Ben is 100 years old on the inside.
Okay.
I mean, let's be honest. Ben is an opera singer and an opera Ben is trained as an opera singer and he's an opera director.
Okay.
So he is 100 years old.
All right.
On the inside.
That makes sense.
Yeah. My mom also had Tony Negroni.
Yeah.
Had a dirty martini phase like a couple years ago. And I remember she bought some sort of like dirty martini.
She
like
some dirty stuff.
Like, I don't know if it was like vermouth that came already doctored with olive juice. I don't know. If she's listening to this, like, no shade, mom, as the kids say. But anyway, I think that she saw it like advertised somewhere and she thought that sounds exciting. And she had sort of her dirty martini summer.
Oh, I've definitely had like a thing where I got some bottle and like had a phase of that thing until it was used up and then forgot about it.
Yeah, I think that's what she did. But I do remember there was an evening she showed up at my house with the dirty martini stuff and was very excited to make me a dirty martini. And she made me one. And I really thought I was going to like it because I like the idea of the olive brine. And I felt like I kind of suffered through it just in solidarity.
Okay, but we're going to do it again today. And I might even try a sip. Like, okay so we're not a yucking of yums kind of show.
No, no, no.
But like, I feel like the whole, like aesthetically, I love the idea of a martini. As an actual thing to drink, I feel like it's probably not for me, but I haven't tried it since I was probably 20. So
the person who I think makes martinis look best is not James Bond.
Not James Bond. Okay.
The food writer, Alicia Kennedy.
Okay.
Who lives in Puerto Rico. She's originally from New York, lives in Puerto Rico. I believe her husband is a former bartender or maybe still is a bartender. The two of them...
It's hard to get out of the game once you're a bartender. They keep dragging you back
that's
in.
That's true. The two of them, they live really well.
Sure.
Anyway, she loves martinis so much. I believe she may have one tattooed like on her finger.
Oh, that would make a very good tattoo.
I know, right? Just like a line drawing of the glass. Which I know we're going to talk more about in a minute. But anyway, whenever she posts a photo on Instagram of a martini, it always looks perfect. And I think some of it is that she's in Puerto Rico and everything there looks slightly dewy all the time because it's hot. However, oh my gosh, it always looks so cold, so like perfectly like sparkling somehow. Not the liquid itself, but just like the,
yeah, I understand.
The whole... It's basically like when Edward Cullen goes into the light and begins shimmering.
Yeah, 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 of course.
Yeah, it's like that, except with a martini.
I'm more Team Edward, which in this is a metaphor for like a totally different drink.
Oh,
okay. Wait, I have to mention another drink again because this is going to drive me nuts for the whole episode if we don't think of it. When I said like I got a bottle and used it up and then never made that cocktail again, the thing I was thinking of was this cocktail called the Harvard Cooler, which is made with that expensive apple brandy.
Oh,
what is that stuff called?
Or cognac? No, cognac is made from champagne grapes.
Yeah, so it's French. It's not Applejack and it's not cognac.
Oh, it is.
This is it. This is that moment, listeners, where you're all y'all screaming at us.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
I know.
Shut up for a minute and maybe I'll come up with it.
We're going to have to Google
it. No, we got to Google it.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to get this. I feel like it ends in A-R-D.
Oh, is it Armagnac? No, that's also a...
Armagnac is prunes or plums or something.
Yeah, okay. I think Armagnac may also be grapes.
Is it?
Oh, no. This show just went off the rails. Okay. So we need to find out what is Armagnac and what is that apple stuff called?
Okay.
French apple brandy. Calvado.
Okay. Well, it has a D in it.
Yeah. Okay. And what is Armagnac? It's a distinctive kind of brandy. It's made from grapes.
Oh,
I think you thought prunes because like prune Armagnac is a very common pairing.
Oh, jeez.
And I know that because I'm a very fancy guy.
I'm so disappointed in myself that I couldn't come up with Calvados.
Okay, I have to talk about one other drink, but this one is not a quiz. Did you know that there's a new official drink of the summer in the Amsterdam Burton House? It is a non-alcoholic drink, and it's called the Boston Cooler. And it's a drink from Michigan, as you can tell by the name. And it is an ice cream soda made with ginger ale blended with vanilla ice cream, and it rules.
Wow, that sounds really good. I have been, so you know, it's kind of weird that we're doing this episode today.
I will do anything to put off having to drink a martini.
It is kind of weird that we're doing this episode today, not only because neither of us drinks martinis, but also because I decided to see, like, how long I could go without drinking.
Oh,
and so, anyway, we're recording this on, what is it, August 7th?
Okay.
Let's see. I had a drink on July 21st. And not since then.
I don't think we're going to drink a large amount of these.
I don't think so
today.
Either. So I'm fine with it.
Okay. So should we talk about a little bit of definitions and history and then start stirring up some cold ones?
Yeah.
Real martini drinkers refer to them as cold ones.
Oh, that's what Bella calls Edward Cullen.
Sorry. Is he cold?
Yeah, do you remember? Well, anyway, I've watched the movie twice recently.
I read the first book and saw the first movie. You watched the movie twice recently? Yeah. And like, is he cold? And isn't that like
He's
bad?
Cold. He's cold. He goes to adjust the stereo. He's driving the car and she goes to like touch his hand or something. And she's like, oh, you're so cold. And then she goes home and like looks up a book about like Quileute legends or something about like the history of like vampires in Washington State or whatever, and learns that vampires are called the cold ones. Crack one open and drink it.
That's great. I thought you were going to say that he like reached for the car radio and like put it on cold FM.
I don't even know. Cold hits. Oh,
like the cold, stuff nobody cold as ice. What?
No, I was thinking like the opposite of
like hot hits. Yeah. like one hit wonders that have been completely forgotten by history.
Yeah, that's right.
Are still being played on cold FM and listened to by sparkly boys.
God, I love sparkly boys.
Yeah, they're good. Okay. Still Team Edward.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah, no, Team Edward all the way.
So Molly, you may be wondering, what is a martini?
I am.
Oh man, it's been so long. We haven't been in the studio for like a month because like you were out of town and then I got COVID and like, it's so good to be back.
It's really good to be back. Also, Matthew made me a grilled cheese so I wouldn't be drinking on an empty stomach. Mm-hmm. And you asked how I wanted it cut, if I wanted it cut.
Yeah.
And I told you to surprise me. And so you got like a kind of like zigzag down the middle. So, well, I don't know, like it was more like a...
Yeah, what? How like, would you, like a Tetris.
You turned it into like a Lego or something. Yeah. It was pretty great.
Thanks. Okay. Yeah, I enjoyed doing that, but next time it's going to be even more toothy.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so first of all, we're not going to get into espresso martinis and like drinks that are served in martini glasses but don't have any ingredients in common with the original martini.
Okay.
Because like we would be here all day.
Are we going to be talking about the Martinez? Oh, yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
Great.
Okay, so a martini is a cocktail consisting of gin or more recently vodka, vermouth, and an olive or lemon twist, and sometimes bitters.
Okay.
Obviously, it is served in a martini glass.
And I want to say, too, that we're not going to be tasting, and I also don't think we're going to be talking about a vodka martini.
Yeah, I mean, I did just mention it, but other than that, I think that was the last mention.
That was it. Yep. Yeah. Okay, great.
Okay, so let's talk about a little about history. So as you might expect for a famous cocktail, a lot of people claim to have invented it or know the real story, and we're never going to know for sure.
That's right.
We know that there were precursors by the late 1800s and that the modern martini was definitely popular in the roaring 20s.
That checks out. Yep. I can picture it like, you know, your flapper dress, your martini.
Yeah, maybe like one in each hand, maybe like one between your toes.
Wow, things were roaring.
I imagine like the roaring 20s, I feel like they must have roared harder than we've ever roared since.
That's true. Right? Otherwise, they wouldn't be called the roaring 20s.
It might have, and like the most accepted story is that it developed from a cocktail called the Martinez from Martinez, California, made with gin, sweet vermouth, maraschino, and orange bitters.
Okay.
And by 1888, there was a bartender's manual by Harry Johnson, which I think is a funny name.
That's true.
And it had a martini cocktail recipe containing gin, vermouth, curacao, bitters, and, quote, gum syrup.
What's gum syrup?
Right. That's what I said. So it's obviously it's simple syrup with gum arabic or gum arabic. I'm not sure how to pronounce it for a silky texture.
So what's gum arabic?
Gum arabic is the hardened sap of the acacia tree used as an emulsifier.
I know I've seen it in a bunch of food things. I mean, doesn't it sometimes show up in ice cream or is that that's guar gum.
Yeah, there's a lot of gums.
Okay. Okay.
And gum arabic is one of them.
I have a feeling that there are bartenders out there who are like making their own gum syrups for sure.
They're called gum boys.
That's true.
And it's not a gendered term. They're called gum boots. Isn't that, is that like a kind of boot?
Gumshoes.
They're called gumshoes, obviously. They only come out from behind the bar to solve crimes. Cold cases.
<That's laughs> right.
The kind of cases you hear about on Cold FM.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then in 1907, Bartender's Guide by William Boothby contained a recipe for a, quote, dry martini, which contained gin, vermouth, orange bitters, and lemon and an olive, like lemon peel and an olive.
I think I like the sound of that with the orange bitters.
It sounds good. I was thinking about, I didn't get orange bitters and I don't have any, so we're not going to try that today.
Okay.
But as we'll hear later, Hot Pots, husband of the producer of the show, Brandon, is a big fan.
Did you say the producer?
I said the
yeah, Hot Pot, husband of the producer of the show. Sorry, Abby. Okay. Anyway, what about Hot Pots?
Abby's a fantastic producer.
Hire her, for real.
She's so good that by the time you hear this, it's going to sound like I pronounced it correctly.
Okay, but what about Hot Pots?
He's a fan of orange bitters in his martini.
Oh, okay. Did you know that, or did you like interview him for this episode?
Abby put it on the agenda.
Oh, where?
Down there.
Down there? Ooh, sorry, Abby. Okay.
So, the dry martini recipe from William Boothby's book in 1907 contained equal parts gin and vermouth, so not what we would call a dry martini today.
Okay. Do you know what else happened in 1907?
Yeah, I think you're about to tell me.
Oklahoma statehood.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that when the land rush was or no?
No, that was earlier.
Okay.
was earlier. I think that was 1889.
What's the official cocktail of the state of Oklahoma? I know there is one because recently on Jeopardy, some contestant said that he was trying to make all of the 50 state cocktails. I don't know what Washington's is either.
I didn't know there were like state cocktails. I mean, I'm all about like state flowers, state birds. State cocktails,
yeah.
I don't know.
I saw your favorite bird outside today.
You texted me that I should beware that the menace, Steller's Jay, is outside. They do live outside.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay, so there's got to be like a lot of controversies around what is the right way to do a martini. Are these like...
So let's talk about some controversies and variations, and then let's try some before we go into talking about the martini glass and other stuff.
Okay.
As I was writing up this agenda, I completely had the martini like rise and fall of popularity like way off, because I sort of imagined that they got popular in the 80s and like Gordon Gekko would drink them.
Oh, yeah.
And then like, you know, declined in popularity in the 90s. Oh, no. They were popular like we said in the 20s, like continued to be popular through the 50s, started to decline in the 60s and became pretty unpopular by the early 70s.
Okay. And then when did they come back?
They've never come back to that extent.
Okay.
Like today, it's not a very popular drink order.
Yeah.
Like a classic martini.
That's true.
Yeah. So I do remember people in the 90s like joking about how everyone hated vermouth and like cool people drank the driest martinis. Like you just like say the word vermouth near the glass.
Yeah. Like, you like wave the closed bottle of vermouth over the glass.
And then I remember reading, because I was like reading a ton of food writing. And then I remember reading articles like, actually, vermouth is tasty and you should make a classic martini. So there's like, you know, backlash to the backlash. And kind of don't really care.
Okay.
So let's turn to Wikipedia for some definitions and variations. So Wikipedia says, quote, a dry martini is made with little to no vermouth. Ordering a martini extra dry will result in even less or no vermouth added.
So, is that like negative vermouth?
It sounds like if you order a extra dry martini, you get somehow they suck vermouth out of it.
Like, is there like vermouth infused into the substance of the glass and they like draw it out? They like squeeze it extra hard?
Well, you know, there's vermouth and anti-vermouth that if you accidentally shake them together, it explodes. The standard ratio is 2-1 gin to vermouth.
Okay, wait, hold on. Should we go ahead and make one of these?
Yeah, let's pause here and make one. Yeah, okay. I'm kind of excited to try it.
I'm kind of excited too. Right, we got to get it really cold.
Yes.
Okay. Matthew, I'm a little bit upset that you didn't put the gin in the freezer when you got home, because we're going to be starting with room temperature alcohol.
I don't think it makes that much difference.
But I think you're going to melt the ice more and get more water in the drink. But you know what? That's cool, because that's probably what you and I want anyway. You know, my friend Ben, who is a martini man, he also is a fan of, so he keeps vodka in the freezer, and the only time in my life that I have had like a vodka shot was at Ben's house. Yeah, it was vodka straight from the freezer, and I do think I squeezed a tiny bit of lemon into mine, and then I sipped it, and it was actually delicious. And for a second, I didn't know who I was, because that is absolutely not something I would ordinarily be into. Have you ever done shots?
No.
I've never done a shot either. Ever.
I've maybe like drunk one shot of something.
Did you sip it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would totally sip it. I'm like scared of shots. I mean, vaccines too. Like
No,
but I just don't like needles. I'm fine with what's in them.
Okay.
No, I don't like needles.
Oh, yeah, I don't either.
Okay, so we've got a bunch of supplies here. We've got Beefeater Gin, which was the second favorite gin in a Serious Eats roundup. The first one was too expensive.
Okay.
We've got Dolan brand vermouth, recommended vermouth by Abby.
Yep.
We've got green olives with pimentos.
Okay.
We've got a lemon.
And how did you choose olives with pimentos?
That seemed to be, when I was researching, that seemed to be the classic choice for a martini with an olive in it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
And like, when I imagine like, what does a martini with an olive look like? I imagine the little pimento guy.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Okay.
I'm really, as I said, when I arrived here and saw the bottle of Beefeater, I'm very pleased that you got Beefeater. I think it's just sort of a classic, like, London dry gin.
That's good. Usually you make fun of the things I buy for the show.
Oh, no. And I also, hey, well done, Abby, telling him to get Dolan, because that is the kind of vermouth I actually have at home.
Okay. So I'm just doing like 2 ounces of gin and 1 ounce of vermouth so I don't have to do math.
Great. Perfect. So we're doing a classic here. With the old standard 2-1 ratio. Matthew is about to stir it.
Yeah, my cocktail spoon's in the dishwasher and I'm too lazy to wash it, so I'm just going to use...
Wow, your cocktail spoon's in the dishwasher? Have you been making cocktails?
I've been using it for making iced green tea.
Ah, yes.
That sounds
good. You know, it smells really good.
It does. Floral.
Oh, I love the smell of gin. That smells really good.
Is that stirred enough, do you think?
Okay, and you have a Hawthorne strainer here.
Yep. That's the, how would you describe the Hawthorne strainer? It's the springy boy?
It's the springy boy. Yeah, it's so cute. I don't have a Hawthorne strainer, and I keep meaning to get one. I feel like it's like such a basic thing to have in one's cocktail repertoire.
Will you pour this? Like, I have bad aim. And then we can decide how we want to garnish. Oh, it's my first martini. Look at that.
Oh God, isn't it interesting how you can like really see the viscosity of the alcohol or the liquor?
Yes. And it's from the gum. Okay. So are we going to put an olive in here?
Yeah. Put it. Right. We got to put an olive in one, and we're going to do what? Like a little lemon twist in another.
Yeah, you do the lemon
Shall
twist.
Okay. Here we go. Oh my God. I can't believe I'm going to attempt to, I almost said to do this on air. But not like anybody's going to see how bad this lemon twist is. Okay. Oh, that's not terrible, actually. I'm going to twist it over the glass.
Okay. I feel like I have to take a picture of this because it does look pretty iconic. Oh, yeah.
Oh, these look great. Really good. Do you think we're going to hate these? I can see a little bit of lemon oil on the surface of the glass, and that is really pleasing.
I think I might like the lemon one. I don't think I'm going to like the olive one.
Okay, can I?
Yeah, dig in.
Can I taste? Okay, I'm going to smell it first.
Okay.
Oh, I can really smell the lemon oil.
Cheers.
Oh, cheers. I don't understand what the deal is.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that lemon oil on top is very, very appealing. No, this is kind of how I remember tasting it when I was a kid and hating it.
Yeah, this is just like, God, we're terrible, Matthew.
I feel like I don't think these ingredients go together, which I know is a silly thing to say.
I just feel like this tastes like...
Because I've had vermouth and enjoyed it, and I've had gin drinks and enjoyed them.
Oh my gosh, I love gin.
Yeah.
Hold on, just for shits and giggles, can I just taste a little bit of this gin straight?
Yeah, of course.
I'm just going to drink room temperature gin out of a jigger.
Uh-huh, totally normal.
Okay, I'm going to smell this.
It smells great. Like, I'm for sure going to make a gin and tonic with this tomorrow.
So that's really delicious.
Yeah.
And I love vermouth. I mean, I drink vermouth straight. Why do I hate this? Like, I feel like this tastes like, I imagine, rubbing alcohol tastes. It's like you put the two flavors together and they cancel out.
We were going to make like several other kinds of martinis, but I think we shouldn't. I guess.
Can I try the lemon one again?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess if we made one with less vermouth, it's going to just pretty much taste like gin. And it's going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're dry martini drinkers. Yeah, this is puzzling.
I also don't like the flavor of the lemon oil.
Okay.
I feel like I'm drinking like furniture polish.
Yeah, you did put in kind of a big honking lemon twist there.
I feel personally attacked, but I thought that would make it better.
No, I agree. I would have done the same.
I'm just perplexed. What are we missing?
Like, do you want to try the dirty martini where you add a little bit of olive brine to this one?
Sure.
Okay.
Why don't you just take like a spoonful?
Yeah.
I mean, people who really love martinis don't want a dirty martini because it doesn't taste right.
I don't want one because I don't want olive juice. I don't like olives. I know this is a personal failing.
No, that is...
Okay, well, sometimes we're surprised at the results of a tasting on the show, and sometimes we're not.
But I think of myself as...
It's odd.
It's so weird. So here's the thing. I like really boozy cocktails. I mean,
I usually don't, but like, I like an old-fashioned. That's a really boozy cocktail.
I mean, I love, like, a Negroni. I love a Manhattan. I love all these very, like, booze-forward cocktails. I will gladly drink bourbon straight.
Have you ever had one bourbon, one scotch, and one beer?
I love gin and tonic. I love vermouth. I don't get this. It feels like it takes the fragrance of both of these main ingredients and like they cancel each other out.
Well, to me, it's more like they smash into each other and explode.
It's terrible.
But if you like it.
Maybe, that's right. We weren't supposed to yuck anybody's yum.
I don't know. Like, if anyone was really excited to hear our martini episode because they're a big martini fan.
I mean,
well,
I think you can
laugh at us.
What's boring about an episode where we really don't like what we're enjoying, and by enjoying eating or drinking, is that like there's nothing interesting about not liking something. I've never thought about that before.
That is absolutely true.
But this is we have nothing interesting to say about this.
I was thinking back to when yesterday for no reason about how and I used to write restaurant reviews and like occasionally I would write a negative review and if I could go back in time like I wouldn't have written any negative reviews. I would have just like gone somewhere else.
Yeah. No, I agree. But when it comes to like this cocktail situation, like there's nothing interesting for us to say when we don't like something. It's weird.
However, we have a lot of other stuff. I mean, like martinis are still interesting and we still have a lot of stuff to talk about that includes some pretty funny stuff.
Well, there's a part of me that wishes we had somebody on here who really loves martinis.
But like then, hot pots.
But I think then we would like just sit around and be like, really? You do?
What's it like? This episode is brought to you by MasterClass.
Matthew, this weekend I took class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very
yes,
similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on MasterClass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, MasterClass is for you if you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best. Mm-hmm. You go to MasterClass. You can, learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on MasterClass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to MasterClass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Looking for some amazing TV to stream? Indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are now streaming on Hulu. Then you can move to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits, streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking.
Let's talk more about variations and controversies.
Okay, so what's a Gibson? Because I feel like I confuse a Gibson with a Gimlet, with a Collins, with
totally,
a Ricky.
Totally was thinking Gimlet, like which one's a Gibson, which one's a Gimlet.
Okay.
A Gibson is a martini with a cocktail onion instead of an olive, and my grandfather used to drink these.
This is a real old man thing to do, even more than other old man things.
Yeah, he was a mean old alcoholic, and he loved a Gibson.
Okay.
Which... Again, like, I'm not saying that anybody who likes a Gibson is a mean old alcoholic.
No. Okay. No, Matthew is only speaking about his own family.
Yes, right. Okay, a perfect martini uses equal parts dry and sweet vermouth. I almost want to try that. I don't have sweet vermouth on hand.
I would be very interested in that. Yeah. I mean, I just love vermouth, so I don't know.
Okay. We did the dirty martini with olive brine. I'm not going to taste it. Vodka martini has vodka. James Bond's favorite drink was the Vesper martini, which was introduced in the book Casino Royale and contains gin, vodka, and quina lillet, which was replaced with Lillet Blanc in 1986. And Ian Fleming later said that he personally found the drink unpalatable.
Who's Ian Fleming?
The author of the James Bond books.
Oh, Okay. All right.
Which, I mean, like, there's no reason, like, if you come, you might think of a
you can have a character who does things you don't like.
No, I think if you're an author, you are, like, implicitly signing off on everything your characters do.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Saying,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's the deal with a martini glass? Because I think they're ugly.
Really?
Yeah, I don't own any because I don't like them.
Now I'm going to be with this. What the thing you just said is about to happen because I think they're awesome. I don't own any, but I think they look cool. And so now I'm going to be the person being like, how could you not like them?
I think my thing is that most martini glasses that I encounter out in the world are in places where people are really into like decorative martini glasses.
Oh, sure.
I feel like maybe this is because I never go into a bar and order a martini. Maybe there I would encounter like a beautiful crystal martini glass that would feel really delicate and lovely.
It would probably depend on the bar.
But I hate all the like decorative shit that somehow just people love to make martini glasses that are like either huge or that are a color or that.
Yeah.
Like
I was imagining like a real like classic like art deco, like, you know, spare modernist.
I don't know that I've seen actually, now that I think about it, many martini glasses that felt light in the way of like a crystal glass.
And I'm sure they're out there.
I'm sure they are too, but I don't like
it. It's a heavier thing.
Yeah, I don't like a glass.
Okay, so I was, you don't like a, yeah, thanks for not letting that, I was about to let that go by. you prefer a martini glass made of wood.
No. Okay. I was actually thinking silver. Although
silver goblet.
No, I learned from MFK Fisher that one never drinks a martini from silver. She says this in her essay, Borderland.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Why not?
She uses...
Is it because silver is mildly
she
toxic?
She says, like, it would be like drinking a martini from silver. Like, it isn't done. Like, that kind of vibe.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty cool, honestly.
I wonder if it gives off, like, a sort of, like, silvery taste. You know, that metal taste.
I was very pleased to learn that the martini glass comes with possibly the stupidest apocryphal origin story of any food-related item that I've ever heard, and we've had some really silly ones. So, according to Wikipedia, a popular story says the martini glass was invented during Prohibition so that in the case of a raid on a speakeasy, the large rim allowed the drink to be easily disposed of.
What?
Isn't that great?
That's so dumb. It's also interesting. I would never think of it as a large rim or a way of describing a martini glass as having a large rim.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's like a, yeah.
It's like, it is.
It's a wide diameter.
Yeah.
For the amount of fluid that it contains.
And it is really interesting the way that stuff, like, pours over a lip like that.
Elaborate.
Well, no, I mean, I think about like a champagne flute.
A shampoo flute.
Think about a champagne flute. And the way when you hold it to your mouth, it directs the liquid in a small portion of the rim. It directs it to come out. Like there's a little conductor.
You might need to draw a picture.
No, but do you know what I mean? Whereas a martini glass, I do get it. Like, look how wide the part that's about to flow out is.
Oh, I see what you mean.
See what I mean? The liquid, when it comes to the rim to pour over the edge, there's a real, like, width to it.
I see what you're saying now. I often find, like, if I am really thirsty and I, like, pour myself a glass of water and, like, you know, like, whoa, I, like, need to drink some water, like, often I'll drink it so fast that it, like, dribbles out of the sides of my mouth, which is super sexy.
I think that's what a martini glass is designed to do.
To make everyone look sexy.
Because truly, like, the width of the liquid that's coming out of it is, like, mouth wide.
Right. Yeah, I see. In fact, the martini glass dates to 1925 when it was introduced at the Paris Exhibition, but it was originally a modernist champagne coupe.
Oh, I love a champagne coupe.
Yeah, so you can see how it could be related.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Wikipedia, quote, the martini glass has somewhat fallen out of favor in modern times due to its tendency to spill drinks, and the coupe is sometimes used instead.
Also, I would say that I think in a lot of places, martini glasses are being used to serve dessert.
Yes, of course.
So they've all been, like, taken over by the pastry chef.
Yeah, the pastry chef snuck behind the bar and stole them in the dead of night.
That's right.
And then the bartender had to come out from behind the bar, the gumshoe, and solve the case.
That's right.
So this led me to a wonderful article that we'll link to from the magazine Punch called The Life and Death of the Martini Glass by Lizzie Monroe. And I'm going to quote from it a couple times. Quote, there are few symbols in the drink world more powerful, more recognizable, or more American than the martini glass. An angular monument to deco design, its characteristic V-shaped bowl and fine stem have long represented that most iconic of drinks, so much so that there is arguably no other image that better communicates the very notion of the cocktail.
That's such a good point. That's really true.
There is also no glass more despised by today's bartenders.
I get that.
And then she interviews a bunch of bartenders who are like, yeah, they fall over all the time. It sucks. But the actual martini has been out of favor for a long time, too. And like I said, it seemed to me like something Gordon Gekko would drink, but I was wrong. Lizzie Monroe writes, following its nearly two-decade-long decline, the martini would fall out of vogue entirely by the early 70s. In 1973, Esquire derided it as, quote, a bitter medicinal tasting beverage that represented everything from phony bourgeois values and social snobbery to jaded alcoholism and latent masochism. I don't quite know what that last part means, but...
Wow.
But that does sound like something Esquire magazine would say.
It sure does. And I have to agree that it is a, I don't know if I'd say it's bitter, but it is a medicinal tasting beverage. And I love a medicinal tasting beverage. But this to me tastes just like the word I'm looking for is unalloyed alcohol.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I get what you mean. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was even more delighted to find there is an entire Wikipedia page devoted to the concept of the three martini lunch.
Do tell.
Boy, am I going to read a bunch from this.
Okay, I'm ready.
You ready?
It's story time.
Quote, in the United States, the three martini lunch or noontime three martini, a term I've never heard, is a leisurely indulgent lunch enjoyed by business people or lawyers. It is named from the common belief that many people in the above mentioned professions have enough leisure time and wherewithal to consume more than one martini during the workday. The three martini lunch became particularly identified in popular culture with Madison Avenue advertising executives in the 1960s and 70s, who supposedly became more creative after such lunchtime libations. The term is sometimes used in political debates on tax deductibility of business meals in the U.S.
Oh, my God.
The three martini lunch, still quoting here, is no longer common practice for several reasons, including the implementation of fitness for duty programs by numerous companies, the decreased tolerance of alcohol use, a general decrease in available leisure time for business executives, and an increase in the size of the martini, which made me feel so bad for business executives who have less leisure time.
So sad. So sad.
And finally... quote, Jimmy Carter condemned the practice during the 1976 presidential campaign. Carter portrayed it as part of the unfairness of the nation's tax laws, claiming that the working class was subsidizing the $50 martini lunch. A rich businessman could write off this type of lunch as a business expense, thereby reducing the cost by his effective tax rate. His opponent, Gerald Ford, in a 1978 speech to the National Restaurant Association, responded with, quote, the three martini lunch is the epitome of American efficiency. Where else can you get an earful, a bellyful, and a snootful at the same time. Good joke, huh?
Was his wife Betty Ford?
Yeah.
This checks out.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. So, Gerald Ford, let's get him on the show.
Let's get him on the show. Guy. Okay. So, wow. I am fascinated by this.
Oh, so here's Hot Pots. Do you want to share Hot Pots' martini recipe since I've been talking for an hour?
So producer Abby writes in that she really likes the martinis that Hot Pots makes. And here is his recipe or his preferred formula. 2.5 ounces London dry gin, a half ounce dry vermouth, Dolin brand, a dash of orange bitters, and a lemon peel. You put the gin and vermouth in a mixing glass full of ice, stir until frosty, strain into a chilled glass, express lemon peel over the glass, and use as garnish.
I think you did express the lemon peel.
I did. Yeah. I expressed it.
We're still not going to like it, but...
Yeah. Okay. Huh. I'm a little disappointed in
us. I think there are some martini drinkers among our listeners, and I would like to hear from them so we can get your side of the story. Contact at spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
I mean, I'm not sure what your side of the story would be other than I like the taste of it, which is fine.
But I'm interested in that because, I don't know. I really like strong alcohol, but this is not for me. Okay.
Do we have any segments?
We do. We have some spilled mail from listener Erica. Listener Erica says, are we still sharing about themed food nights? I meant to write in about our weekly night sooner, but life happened, so here we are. Anyway, I wanted to share about our weekly night, which has no formal name, but is often referred to as Kids Cooking Night. It started because my 12-year-old daughter, who has always loved helping in the kitchen, realized that even though she has lots of kitchen helping experience, she really didn't have a lot of interesting meals she could make from start to finish on her own and wanted to change that. So now she gets gets at least one night each week, generally Friday night, where she plans, shops for, and cooks a meal from start to finish with as little help from adults as possible. She will look through all of our cookbooks, scour the internet for recipes she wants to try out, and sometimes it's just learning how to make some family favorites with recipes that live in our brains. She will make a shopping list, and on Friday after school, we go shopping for what she needs. Shopping has turned into mini lessons on how to select produce and come up with on-the-fly substitutions for ingredients. Cooking also incorporates mini lessons, especially on time management, but also on improving her knife skills, managing multiple burners, etc. It's definitely helped her build up a lot of skills, and it's fun. Her favorite meal to make solo is currently black bean and zucchini tacos, which she takes credit for creating. This led me to wonder how you got both kids of the show, well, December and June anyway, involved in cooking and what they enjoy making.
Yeah, what does Gilbert enjoy making?
Gilbert is our dog. Gilbert enjoys eating literally everything.
Literally anything, yeah. This is a great question.
This is such a good question. And I absolutely love that part of Erica's family's like tradition involves the shopping.
Yes, I noticed that
too.
That's great.
That is really, that's an extra step that I had not thought about.
And like can be like, you know, if you like grocery shopping, which I do, can be like the most fun part.
Mm-hmm.
So my answer is, so like my kid December is like currently in college, although currently home from college, and like doesn't cook dinner that often. When they do, they will typically make like mapo tofu or like one of their favorites.
Mm-hmm.
They often will make themselves like a lunch from scratch, like fried rice or egg rice, which is a couple of fried eggs on steamed rice.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'll make fried rice for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it. Like I don't like to be pushy about things, and so like I have not tried to like push them to cook more. I mostly started cooking when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, yeah. I would say I also did not. My interest in cooking came along pretty organically when I was about 17,
mm-hmm.
and I was much more interested in baking than in cooking. Truly, so yeah. So it's interesting because there are certain things that June is really good at making and always really like happy and game to make,
yeah.
Like scrambled eggs, mm-hmm. for instance. Oh, June also, and maybe this doesn't even count, but I think it does. June is always up for making tuna salad.
Okay. Yeah, that totally counts.
But here is one thing that I have observed that I do want to find a way to help June work on without being naggy.
It's really hard not to be pushy when you're a parent.
It's very hard, especially when you are someone.
And I don't mean that like there's anything like inherently wrong with being pushy. It just doesn't work.
Well, I think one thing that's really tricky for me is I'm really good at being a home cook.
Yeah.
And I am often cooking in a way that is, I think, really streamlined and sort of as quick and obstacle-free as I can do it.
Sure.
Like, for instance, okay, June has been wanting to make this pound cake from the book More Than Cake, which mm-hmm. I mentioned as a now but
yeah.
wow a number of weeks ago. June has been wanting to make this vanilla bean pound cake from that book. And I kept sort of like just putting it off or being like, oh yeah, we could do that next week. So finally one day, I really kind of forced my own hand by like just taking the book out, and I left the butter out on the counter to soften and left out the eggs that we were going to need. And so like it was all out there, and I was sort of committing myself
yeah.
and June to doing it.
And that was a week ago, and they're all still sitting on the
counter.
They
did sit there for like 3 days. But no, here's the thing that I find really tricky. So June is a really detail-oriented kid. Of course, about the things that June is interested in.
Sure, of course.
Like a human trait, right? But like, I was blown away by June's like inability to thoroughly read the instructions.
Yeah, sure.
Like, and I know that this is so normal for a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
But I get so frustrated. Like, I said to June, like June said to me, so the recipe started by you like grease a loaf pan and then put some turbinado sugar in there. And the recipe called for, I think, a quarter cup of turbinado sugar. And you put 2 tablespoons in the loaf pan and kind of dust the loaf pan with it. And then the remaining 2 tablespoons go on top of the batter before
okay.
you bake the cake, right? So I got the turbinado sugar down for them. And I was like, okay, so, you know, here's your measuring stuff, whatever. whatever, June starts to get out the quarter cup. And I was like, ah, be sure to read the recipe really closely about what you do with that turbinado sugar. And June was like, ah, well, I put it in the loaf pan. And I was like, how much? And June was like, a quarter cup. And I was like, nope, read the recipe again. And June was like, I did. And I was like, no. You clearly didn't. I mean, I'm like standing there like telling my child like, well, no, you did not read the recipe. Like, it was not a very like suave parenting moment. And I think some of this has made me feel a little bit less than encouraging about June, like taking on an entire dinner project or whatever.
Yeah. No, I totally get
because
that.
Because it requires so much from me. And I know that that's like what parenting is.
I know, but
I don't know.
But it's hard.
Anyway, but June is always into baked goods. June is always really well, like willing to help. And I need to work on my... like my patience.
Yeah, no, I think I had like very much the same experience. You know, I think you have to sort of like have faith that that you're like setting a good example, even if your kid doesn't do that much cooking. Because like, you know, my mom was an excellent home cook. And like, you know, I didn't make dinner at home like hardly ever as a kid, but I saw her do it and I would occasionally make something. And then, you know, in my 20s, I was living, you know, with wife of the show, Lori, and I like, you know, learned to cook over the course of a few years.
Well, and
that's fine.
I think that I do take some solace in the fact that I know that June really enjoys the food that I cook, and I think enjoys it in many ways, like more than like getting takeout or going out.
Ooh, this is sort of a sneak preview of next week's episode.
And therefore, I do feel like hopefully, even if June doesn't come away from their childhood, like having learned to make entire meals, I think that June, because June loves food and loves to eat and loves to like, June loves nothing more than poring over cookbooks.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I did too at that age. Absolutely.
And so I think between that and the fact that June, I think, values the results of home cooking, I hope it means that at a certain point, June will take that enthusiasm they have and begin to apply it to cultivating a home cooking practice of their own.
Yeah, no, but it's hard. Like when like they are like eager, you know, enthusiastic about it and you don't want to stand in their way, but you also know that the actual process of like helping them through getting a meal on the table is going to be exhausting for you. Like there's no easy answer to that.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see like, I don't know, how what does Erica, like, what do you tell yourself so that you can, like, get through all those questions?
Yeah, that is an excellent question.
I mean, then again, like, your child is 12. I've got a 10-year-old, and there is that's a big two-year difference.
Yeah.
So maybe by the time June is 12, maybe they'll be making dinners, too.
And
June can ride a horse.
Yeah.
This
like,
is true.
Yeah, Erica, we'd like to see your kid ride a horse. maybe they can.
Anyway, that was a great question. Thank you, Erica. That was really thought-provoking.
Yeah.
Matthew, do you have a now but wow?
I do. It is a YA book by Mae Coyuto, and it's called Chloe and the Kai Shao Boys. And it is a fun YA novel that I'm really enjoying, set in Manila. And Chloe, the main character, is planning to go to America for college to study animation, but her dad really wants her to stay in the Philippines. So he sets her up, he and like other relatives set her up on a series of terrible dates to try and get her to meet like the boy that is so great that it'll keep her from leaving home. And obviously, this does not really work as planned.
Does she meet the girl that's so great it'll keep her from leaving home?
That would be an interest. I haven't finished the book, but so it's possible. I don't think so.
Okay.
But I think she does like a boy. But there's tons of food in the book. I don't think I've read a YA book set in the Philippines before, and with no good reason, and I want to read more and would love recommendations. And there's lots of like really believable like late adolescent dialogue in the book. I was just in Portland and hanging out with Lori's brother and his family, and he has three kids who are range in age from high school to middle school.
Okay.
And it was so fun hanging out with them because they are just like zinging each other nonstop and like obviously absolutely love each other and also are just like up in each other's face all the time. Like, oh, but you yesterday you said, and like just like they just have like a way of speaking and like being in each other's face that is so classic.
Excellent.
I really enjoyed getting to see it for a night and then not having to deal with it the next day. So,
you know, I bet our producer, Abby Cerquitella, would know a few things about sibling stuff. Abby has producer Abby has many sisters and maybe a brother. Brothers.
Yeah.
Brothers, too.
Yeah. So producer Abby, get in touch.
Yeah. Let us know. Did you zing each other?
I'm sure there's got to be zinging. Yeah. My brothers and I, we would zing.
You would zing? Did you zong?
We zinged and we zagged.
Oh, great.
Molly's got a newsletter on Substack called I've Got a Feeling that's wonderful. And it's just had an incredible series about how does a queer couple have a baby?
Yeah. Yeah. True story.
You're really going to enjoy. And that's at mollyweisenberg.substack.com.
Matthew makes music. His band is called Early to the Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find them everywhere you stream music.
Weirdly, like we seem to be getting like slightly more popular. Like,
well, that's not weird.
Like our listenership. I figured our listenership would like quickly like drop to zero after like all of our friends listened to it once, but people are still listening to it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
So yeah, Ned, like hang out with other people and talk about like what's wrong with us for not liking martinis at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com.
Mm-hmm.
And until next time, you've been listening to Cold FM. Up next, it's Wild West by Escape Club. Your favorite song for the 80s.
Okay. I'm so impressed that you remembered that band name.
I don't know how I pulled that.
I remember the song.
Living in the 90s.
Living in the wild west.
Something like that. Heading for the 90s. Because it was the 80s. Heading for the 90s.
Living in the wild west.
The wild, wild west.
Wild west. I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amsterberg.
But I think we're going to split the classic into two different glasses and put like lemon in one and we do like half an olive in the other since it's a half size.
Yeah, that's no, that would be so gross to have a half olive. It's like,
what's so gross about that?
I don't know. It feels like half a.
Is like, it going to like leach too much olive juice into it?
Too much olive juice.
Abby is listening to this whole thing.
Like, I think I might like the lemon one, maybe, but like the whole idea of like putting an olive in a drink skeeves me beyond normal levels of skeeve.
Okay, well, what if we start the show?
Okay.
Okay.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches, but there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.